Support for this program comes from Jazz on the Tube, the Internet's largest collection of free streamable classic jazz videos. From Miles Davis to Louis Armstrong, from Thelonious Monk to Duke Ellington, you'll find it all on jazzonthetube.com. Start your free subscription today.
Hi, and welcome to Jazz Talk, a Jazz on the Tube podcast. My name is Ken McCarthy, and this is where we talk with people who are doing important work that supports and illuminates the music we love. The writers, the scholars, the educators, the filmmakers, the producers, and more. Today we're going to be talking with Ronnie Barrage, and Ronnie is a veteran drummer. If we were to list all the people that he's played with over the years, we'd have to take up the rest of the call. It's true, right? I mean, just throw out a few names.
It's been quite a few, and it's been a long distance. But, you know, I've been extremely blessed to play with the people I've played with. I'm so happy.
Yeah. And in addition to being a performer and session musician and leader, he's also an educator. And he also does something which I think is really important, which is bringing the music into the community to promote community healing. And
That's very interesting, right?
You know, and people talk about music. People talk about music being medicine, and I think they think that's just a metaphor. You know, it's like medicine. I disagree. I think it is medicine. You know, it's straight up medicine. Now, it's not the kind of medicine that comes in a bottle, but if we talk about medicine being something that makes people healthier, feel better, act better, feel more comfortable and happy in their lives, clearly that's a good medicine, and clearly our music brings them that medicine. So,
absolutely.
Just so people have a sense, just tell some of the people that you've performed with over the years, just so people have an idea.
I've been blessed. I think out of the drummers or musicians in my age group, I'm 58 now. I'll be turning 59 really soon. I did a couple of cities with Duke Ellington when I was nine. I was actually reciting poetry with the Sacred Big Band series he was doing, bringing people into the word through the music. And in teenager years, I played with Lester Bowie and Fontella Bass out of St. Louis, a great saxophone player named Oliver Sane. I had my own configurations going on in St. Louis. I had a band called No Commercial Potential, NCP. We opened up for fusion groups like George Duke when they came through St. Louis. So I started meeting people. I had the opportunity to meet Woody Shaw, Alan Dawson, and Junior Cook and Rufus Reed when I was in sophomore in high school. So right after, like, my spring break of my senior year of high school, I came to New York because I was like, I have to play this music. So I came to New York. I met Billy Hart, was one of the first people who, you know, saw me play, had me sit in. He had heard about me from what I understand from Woody Shaw, because we hosted Woody Shaw and them when they came to my high school for a week. We used to have this International Jazz Week at University City High in Missouri, and they, you know, jazz artists would come and spend a week, and they would adjudicate local high school bands and things like that, and just hang out with us and coach and mentor us. So that I came for that spring break, and I hung out, and I just made the rounds of New York, you know, meeting people. I met Kenny Kirkland. Then the following year, I graduated, and I tried to go to North Texas State because I had a full scholarship, but it was that just – I'm not going to go into that story now.
Okay.
I ended up just saying, nope, I'm going to New York. So I got to school of Hard Knocks. I used to travel with my – drum set on the subway. Within a year, I started playing with the great Sonny Fortune. Through Sonny Fortune, I met the incredible percussionist who's passed away, Guillerme Franco. He got me an audition with McCoy Tyner. Started working with McCoy Tyner for 3 years. From that job, I started working with Jackie McLean, Woody Shaw, Freddie Hubbard, Sonny Rollins. I worked with Sonny Rollins for years. As a matter of fact, one of the highest paying tours I did was subbing for Jack DeJohnette, and I was playing with Sonny Rollins, Pat Metheny, and the late, great Bob Crenshaw. So I did that for a while. Let's see, I worked with Chico Freeman and Kenny Barron. I worked Sundays at Sweet Basil's with Doc Cheatham and his band, and Major Holly, Sir Roland Hanna, and then almost a 10-year stint with the great Richard Davis and Friends Group, because my blessing really came from being taken under the wing of, like, Elvin Jones, Billy Hart, Danny Richmond, Freddie Waits, Billy Higgins. Those guys embraced me as soon as they saw my playing. It was a whole different community then because, you know, I was able to see them, like, almost on a daily basis, and we developed friendships, you know. When I would go to Paris, Kenny Clarke would pick me up at the train station or whatever and take me to lunch and tell me to have a good tour, you know. It was like, you know, I was extremely blessed. So, yeah, those are a few of the people that I played with. Michael Brecker, I toured with Michael Brecker. I toured with Wayne Shorter, Jaco Pastorius, Joe Zawinul, Bob Berg. Of course, Hamier Blewett from St. Louis, he's always kept me in the mix. I produced like two records for Hamier Blewett, a record for Billy Bang, a record for the World Saxophone Quartet. So I've had an extremely blessed life in the music. Yep. Apart from that, I've been out of New York for over 15 years at a period. I was a single father of two girls for over 10 years. Ended up teaching at Penn State. I'm making a short version now. Ended up teaching at Penn State. Found my wife 5 years ago at Penn State from a wonderful elderly woman who was also immersed in the jazz. She came up under Earl Father Hines in Pittsburgh and married a man named Neil Tate, who was one of the first African-American music directors of Broadway plays. She actually saw my wife and I and was scheming for 4 years to get us together. Finally, she got us at a dinner table at her house because she cooked some soul food for us. I was at her house with my daughters, and my wife showed up with her son. And next thing you know, 5-6 months later, we were married. So we've been married 5 years, and we organized and put together this wonderful nonprofit called World Rhythm Academy.
We'll put a link to that so people can watch it. Hey, one of the things that we always like to know about a musician is, how did you get started? Like, what caught your we heard about the guy over in Poland. What caught his imagination? What caught your imagination? And what were some of the big milestones that helped you develop into the musician you're becoming and you've become and continue to become?
Well, you know, I come from a musical family, so there was like art and music and all of this sense of, you know, hugeness in our house. My grandfather was a prolific poet. So, and my mother's the eldest of eight siblings. So my mother played piano. She had five brothers. Pretty much they were all dibbling and dabbling in music. And then two girls at the end were dibbling and dabbling in music too. By the time I was born, I was just like an extension of the family. I'm playing several different instruments that were lying around the house. Seeing all these people, international people, would come to visit my grandfather, you know, and talk about literature and poetry. And then I have Uncle John, who's was from St. Louis. He actually plays saxophone with several people that go back to around Bessie Smith. So anytime they were coming through St. Louis area, there would be jam sessions in my grandparents' living room. So there was music all the time. My family tells me that I could even walk, so I would just try to figure out how to do that. And it's just in my DNA. The story goes back even further because on my mom's side, also my grandmother Cora Bell, her father he played oboe and clarinet in like one of the first African American circus bands, which turned out to be one of the first Barnum and Bailey bands. His brother also played clarinet in that band, and I have photos and everything. They were called, first I think they were called the American Circus Band, and they used to be, you know, back in the day, African-American musicians were rented out by a guy named PJ, I can't remember his last name, Martin. He had a service where there was all types of entertainers and musicians and things like that, and certain organizations or whatever would rent them out. So what I understand is they were part of the first African-American band. I have a Barnum & Bailey Circus band, too. And I have photos of this these bands with them in their uniforms and, you know, the circus people who had unique features, you know, 8, 9, 10 foot tall people, small people, contortionists.
Wow. And so one of the things this guy, I guess he was like a big, he was like a super agent. And yeah. And then he had a roster of entertainers, and some of them included musicians, and he'd make them available to circuses or to groups all over.
To circuses, to vaudeville, to, you know, anything that was going on, theatrical things like that. I actually did some work, my MFA, researching that, and read a book about him. I can't remember his full name right now, but
yeah,
you know.
Well, it's so interesting, you know, to get that picture of what the music world was like before radio, before television, before even talking movies, before sound.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, there was a whole other world, and music, probably live music, had a much bigger impact. It was probably a lot more common before.
It most definitely did. You know, I teach the history of jazz out here, SUNY Old Westbury in Long Island, and my research is just taking me all over the place to see how, you know, music developed, especially coming out of slavery, how this music developed and took all these different, you know, facets. And it's just amazing, our history, but nobody really knows about our true history. So one of the things I do in teaching as well as in performance is to always, you know, try to educate people by history. I think, you know, if we embrace our history better, we have a better chance of overturning some laws that are still in existence that are racist and separatism. You know, we have a better understanding of our past and want to heal that and change that and form it and shape it into a way that we can all, you know, become empowered by it. So America's like one of the places where our history is so dark. It's like, you know, people are afraid to look at it. But we have to do that now. I mean, we have the Lynch Museum. We have all of these things that are coming up now that people need to address who we are, you know, and heal from it and become stronger, unified as a people.
You know, and part of that is to appreciate and therefore respect that amazing generation of people who, you know, one day they were enslaved with nothing, and the next day they're out on their own with no help at all, and somehow, in just a matter of a generation, they're the next generation, their kids were the Jelly Roll Mortons of the world, who went out and changed the destiny of music for the whole planet.
Right.
And we're not, like, I agree with you. I we need to be, like, aware of that. That was an amazing human achievement. First, just the survival through all that, but not just the survival, but then creating this incredible sophistication and beauty, you know? So, yeah, I think that era of, you know, post-slavery through the end of the 19th century, that's a golden era that we really need to look at more.
That our vision is to serve and work with underserved, marginalized youth from around the world to help them make better decisions, you know, to teach them these histories that we were talking about so that they can know who they are and see life differently through a different lens of the arts and sciences. My wife is an incredible scientist. She's a human geographer.
Oh.
She's got degrees in a lot of different fields, biomedical engineering, I believe, and international affairs. And
wow.
She's finishing her PhD in human geography right now that deals with, oh man, it's kind of intricate.
I'm sure it is. But I get the sense she's really studying a lot of different things that all come together.
Right.
Amazing. That's pretty interesting.
And when we start talking about our passions, it's about, yeah, we have to change the world some kind of way, you know, through the, so now we have these arts and sciences programs that we do, you know.
You also work with elders, so you tell us about that program and how you bring the kids and the elders together.
Right. We're focusing right now on a gen to gen program where there's a elderly center right across the block from where we live, and you know, we were thinking about it. So we did a video talking to some of the people that live there, and they were like, I was like, what is your favorite music? They said, oh, the old jazz, the R&B, you know, the gospel, spiritual music. And I was like, why? And they were like, because of the stories they tell, you know, and how they made a seal. And so that same day, we're walking down the block, and I see a set of teenage girls, like 14, 15. I'm like, hey, girls, would you mind if we talk to you about something, a project we're trying to do in the community? And they're like, absolutely. So we have them on film. I said, what's some of the music you like? Oh, the old school R&B, because the stories are so much better than the music we have today. My wife and I are going to be like, uh-oh, okay. So, you know, there's this opportunity to bridge the gaps because, you know, elders fear the young people. You know, young people walk around thinking they have nothing to learn from older people. And it's just this level of disrespect that's prevailing, you know, and we have to change that course. We have to change that trajectory. So what we're trying to do is we partnered with a couple of elderly centers. We want to bring the youth in from neighboring high schools, a small set of youth. You know, we have to go to the school, you know, and talk to people who they feel are at risk, but at the same time have some type of, you know, openness to something like this.
Yep.
And put them together in a room and have a live concert with, you know, great players such as the people that I work with. And we play a variety of music to open the door to start talking about these things. The long-term goal is that we want to promote mentorship, you know, and friendships across the generations. Because, you know, for me, as I grew up, that's all it was about, hearing the stories from elders and, you know, carrying the groceries for them or whatever, doing something to be involved in the community and learning about our history from people who have survived it and lived it, you know, because, you know, right now that can inspire, you know, these young people. They think what they're going through is just, you know, indicative to them or whatever, just for them. And they just don't understand, you know, there's a whole group of people here that is ready.
I've had the opportunity to go to Cuba a number of times in the last couple of years, and one of the things you see that they have that we don't have is this, you call it gen to gen, generation to generation, cross-generational. Like when there's a music event, everybody comes out for it. It's not just young people or it's not just older people. Everybody, like if it's a rumba, the whole, from a 3-year-old to a 90-year-old, they all come out and participate. And that is such
absolutely,
a
you know that. Yeah, I'm sorry,
thing.
My wonder. It's so powerful, and it's so positive. It's so powerful when you see that. Like I've gone to Africa a number of times, and that's exactly what you see in certain places. When there's a music concert, everybody's there, everybody's participating. It's a feeling. It's a feeling. It's just one of the greatest feelings. You know, it's not about fear or danger or unknown questions. You know, it's just about experiencing the joy of what the music brings and the cultures mixing and the generations mixing.
I don't know why it is that the United States has this fractured generational thing, because you don't see it in other parts of the world. You really see, you know, the young people know they're supported by the older people. The older people know they're respected and cared for by the younger people. And it's it's a natural, it makes sense. How else could we have survived all these millions of years or however long humanity's been around without that kind of cooperation? But somehow in our culture, it's broken down. So I think the work that you're doing is so important to give young people an opportunity to meet older people in a positive environment, and to give older people, they love the opportunity to be exposed to younger people, and music's the perfect medium. There's nothing
better.
Yeah,
and it gives them life, being able to have a relationship with a young person who's energetic and thriving.
And on the other side, the younger people need to know that, hey, there's somebody that's been through this that maybe can give me some direction, that cares about me.
These are not
trivial little things, and tragically, they're missing from a lot of younger people's lives. So I think this program. So tell us about the program, the name, how people find out more about it, how they can support it.
Okay, it's through an organization called Encore.
Can you spell
it? Yes, E N C O R E.
Got it. E N C O R E. Encore. Okay.
And they can find the links to it through our website, which is worldrhythmacademy.org. And that's WORLDRHYTHMACADEMY, World Rhythm Academy .org. And the program itself is we're in the running to win about $50,000. In that process, you know, what's going on right now is a voting campaign. Now we're up against companies, you know, people that already have, you know, hundreds of workers voting and donating and things like that. We're a small nonprofit 501c3, my wife and I, right? We've just been in existence a couple of years, and so we're just trying to get family members and friends and interested people to vote every day. If you can, throw in $5 or something to donate to our organization. It's for worthy causes, you know, to empower marginalized youth around the world to do this generation to generation program. And that's all we do. We're so, you know, I find myself every day just empowered to do this because it makes me feel so good, first of all, when I see a younger person standing there with someone who's been through something and actually learning, right? And talking and laughing and being able to say, oh man, I really like that music. Oh, I hate that music. You know, what do you hate about it? You know, and it's just open this dialogue. But, and before I go on though, I mean, I want to also address something. You said, why are we so disconnected and in this fragmented state? And I really believe, you know, America wants people to be mentally enslaved. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that because, you know, it's about power and control. It's not about freedom here. And that's a reality that, you know, we really need to look at and we need to understand so that we can turn that and throw that out, you know, because it's proven it doesn't work for us as a people, you know. It affects us in through all of the generation, and it keeps carrying on and perpetuating something that has nothing to do with human growth, you know, and love and humanity. So we're still in that thing, you know, we're still in that. And it's almost every type of industry or something is about being in a situation where somebody has power and control over you.
Yeah. Whether it's dealing with the medical industry or dealing with the food industry or dealing with the housing industry or the financial industry, they all seem to be, I mean, this might surprise some of my listeners to hear me say this, but they all seem to be set up against us, you know, and I don't think our education system, that's another system, I don't think they're serving us. I don't think they're helping create independent, critically thinking, free-minded people. And I think, and I'm afraid it's getting worse, not better.
Absolutely. Right now, it's definitely getting worse. I don't even want to go. I'm glad we haven't gone into that political conversation, but you know what I'm saying. Right now, the temperament is horrible. You know, the tone of our country is horrible.
But as somebody said to me, well, you know, now there's an ugly face on it. I mean, everything that's been going on has been going on forever. And now there's a really ugly face on it. But when he's gone, there'll be another guy in there doing this, you know, something similar. So it's really up to us. And I think people, I want to make an appeal to people that love this music. You know, this music is not just entertainment. It's not just a way to fill the time. It is a healing force. It's healing for individuals, but it's also healing for communities, and it's healing for generations and generational communication. And this is, you know, I mean, you heard Ronnie's chops. This is a serious musician, and he's bringing that same level of seriousness to his community work. So I want to encourage everybody. I'm going to have all the links below. Vote every day. Can you vote every day?
You can vote every day, once a day. And we only have 13 days left.
Okay.
It was like a 20-day campaign that they gave up. We're in the final 20 to get this grant. So this is the last stage for voting and donations. But the voting is the most important thing. If people think that your cause is really worthy, then that gets us to another stage where we go out and talk about what we do in California, and then we receive the grant. So
great. So everybody
pushing it.
Great. So everybody, the voting is easy, won't cost you anything. Put a little mark on your calendar put a little mark on your calendar the next 13 days, and every day vote again. It's the old saying, vote early and often. And, you know, and then if you have some, if you're fortunate enough to have some discretionary, I call it this, some people call it disposable income, and my point of view is there's no income that's disposable. However,
right.
there is discretionary income, and if
that's
you,
it.
And if you love this music and it's benefited you, this is a direct way to help other people with the same thing. And I you can hear the passion in Ronnie's voice. You know the seriousness with which he's approached his musical career, and that same seriousness is going to this community work. So we'll put all the links below. Please click on vote. If you got some discretionary income and you want to kick it in, that would be a great thing too. Ronnie Baraj, thank you so much for all that you're doing, and also for spending this time with us and sharing some insight into music and the power of music and your community work.
Man, Ken, thank you so much. And this has just been like, you just like, let's talk. It was so spontaneous. I was like, yeah. You know, 'cause it was like, we need it. And I'm like, whoa. I was thinking last night, I said, I got to send this to Ken. So, man, thank you, man. God bless you, man. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad you were available this morning, because I was telling Ronnie, I got mountains of work on my desk. I got a minute. I got a breathing room right now. Let's just do it. And this is the great, one of the many great lessons of jazz. When the time
Absolutely.
Is right, just do it.
Spontaneously improvise and get it done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ronnie, it's a pleasure to finally get a chance to talk with you in depth, and we're wishing you the best. We're going to have links to everything below so people click, vote. You got that discretionary income. You can let some of it loose in the direction of this great project.
Thank you so much, Ken. And we'll finish the conversation via email too, man. Good to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ken.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please share it. That's how we grow. And remember to subscribe to jazzonthetube.com, the internet's largest collection of free, streamable, classic jazz videos. We'll be right back.